Begin the current daf Masechtas Ksubas daf Nun Tes. Begin 8 lines down from the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf, and from the top of this Amud, where the conclusion of that Gemara explaining a machlekes between Rabbi Shmuel on the one hand and Rabbi Bar Abba on the other hand, in the opinion of Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah regarding the ability of the husband to be makdish the meiser, the excess of the woman's meiser yadayim of her earnings. The Gemara said that there's two obligations that the husband has towards the wife in this arena, and two obligations that the wife has back to the husband. Now, there's a machlekes between Rav Adi Bar Hava and Rav Shmuel, which correlates to which. Rav Shmuel held that mezainis, the husband's obligation to feed his wife, correlates to the wife's earnings from Ma'aseh Yadayim going to her husband. And the ma'a kesef that the husband gives to the wife for her other needs correlates to the ma'aser, to the excess of her earnings. Whereas Rav Bahava held that no, that her mezainis, the fact that he feeds her, correlates to the excess. That's what makes her obligated in giving the excess of her earnings to her husband. Whereas the ma'kesef that he gives her correlates to the ma'aseh yadayim, as the Gemara explained on the top of the Amud. The reason for their machlek is if we compare what's common to what's common, and what's uncommon to what's uncommon, or what's a set amount to a set amount, or and that which is not set to that which is not set. And that the Gemara continues the discussion by Mesa, but the Gemara asks on Rav Bar Hava from the following Braisa. The Braisa says, Tiknu mezainos, they instituted the husband's obligation to feed his wife, tachas ma'isya deha, because in place of her, the obligation of her earnings going to her husband. Now that's like Rav and Shmuel, and not like Rav Bar Hava, who he said that it correlates to the ma'isya of ma'isya deha, of the excess, not to the ma'isya daim. Now the Gemara answers, "Emasay tachas meisur meisur deh." When it says that it correlates to our meisur daim, it means the excess of a meisur daim. So the Gemara says, "Toshima, let's try to bring a proof to this machlekes from a Mishnah later on the Daf Samach Dalma Beis, where seemingly that Mishnah is not like Rav and Shmuel, but rather like Rav Adi Bar Hava. The Mishnah there says, "Im einay noisin la ma kesav letzerchel, if the husband does not give her that ma of money weekly for her needs." Then ma'isya deha shalah. So the Mishnah says, then she gets to keep her income, her primary income. Now that's like Rav Adi Bar Hava, not like Rav Shmuel, because they said that the ma'al kesef correlates to the ma'iser and not to ma'isya daim. So the Gemara says, Ema, here also the Gemara amends it based on the other opinions that it also means ma'iser ma'isya deha shalah. It's a reference to that she gets to keep the excess of her ma'isya daim, but not her ma'isya daim, because that doesn't correlate to the ma'al kesef, that correlates to the mezainis. But however, on this teretz, on this answer, the Gemara asks, but valok tani, but we learned over there in that Mishnah, where the Mishnah then qualifies this halacha, and the Mishnah asks, mahi oisoloi, what is this that she does for him? In other words, what are her earnings that she brings into the family, which correlates to the mokesef that he's not giving her, and seemingly that the Mishnah is saying that she'd be able to keep for herself. Now, the way the Gemara just amended it for Rav Shmuel, it would be a reference to meiser. But what does the Mishnah say? It says, Mishkal Chameh Shlom Shasi Bihuda. It's a reference to the 5 Shlom worth of warp thread in Judea. Now the reason for the warp is in contrast to the weft, which is the warp is more difficult to sew, to weave, than for the weft. And that's what's a reference specifically for Shasi. But what we see is that after that, the Mishnah talks about her ma'isi yadayim, which she gets to keep because the husband's not giving her the ma'al kesef, and it's saying, so what is it that she does for him? It talks about the primary ma'isi yadayim. So obviously that the ratio was talking about the ma'isi yadayim proper and not the excess, the ma'isi yadayim. So that contradicts the teretz that the Gemara is trying to give for Rav Shmuel. They're trying to amend it the way they amended it for that price for Adba Ava, that it doesn't mean ma'isi yadayim, it means the ma'isi yadayim. But you can't say that because the Mishnah then continues right after and says, and what is it that she does for him? Which sounds like it's explaining the ma'isi yadayim that now she gets to keep. It's the Mishkal Chamesh Shlam, which are the primary, not the excess. So the Gemara answers that, truthfully, it's like we're amending it for Rav and Shmuel, that what correlates to the seller to the more kesef that he's not giving her, it's the meiser ma'isi yadayim. That's what the ratio is talking about. Now, hachi karma, this is what the Mishnah then continues in the Sefer, and it says, ma'isi yadeha, what are the primary ma'isi yadayim of hers? Kamahava, how much is that? Now, why would we be asking in the Mishnah that's talking about meiser ma'isi yadayim, in which is correlating to the mokesef that he's not giving her that she gets to keep. Why are we asking about the primary? Because delayed da moisa de da kama. Because we want to know what is the excess. Excess only starts after the primary. And on that, the Mishnah says, Mishkol Chamishlam Shasib Yehuda. If she already made that amount, which yes, that will go to her husband because of the mezainis that he's giving her. But since he's not giving her the mal kesef, she gets to keep excess over 5 slum of Shasin Yehuda Shehin Esa slum beGalil, which is 10 slum in the Galil. And that's, the reason is because a sell in Judea and Yehuda was double the amount of a mishkol of a seller in the Galil, and that's why 5 in Yehuda, which is 10 in the Galil, but doesn't contradict Rav and Shmuel by the fact that it's mentioning and qualifying Ma'aser Dayim, because we want to qualify that so that we know what's the Ma'aser. And that's what the Reish of the Mishnah was saying, that she gets to keep anything above those Chamesh Sloim Shasib Yehuda. Nothing more returns to the discussion that started this all on the previous daf regarding the Mishnah, which was this Machlekes of Ma'aser, of if the husband is makdish the excess of his wife's earnings. So Rameir said hekdish, and Rechel Sandler said that it's chulin. He cannot be makdish it. So Amar Shmuel, he says, Allah gebirch nasan, Allah fazer gebirch nasan. The discussion up until now was in Rameir's opinion, but Shmuel concludes Allah doesn't follow like Rameir, but rather like gebirch nasan, that the husband cannot be makdish, not only like the ratio of the Mishnah, which said he cannot be makdish the primary ma'aser dayim, but even the ma'aser ma'aser dayim, even the excess. Now on that, the Gemara asks, on this halachic conclusion of Shmuel, Umiyam Shmuel Hachi, did Shmuel really say this? That halachas are gebirch nasanla? Now the crux of this question starts on the previous daf, because Shmuel qualified. There was this machlekes Rabin Shmuel and Rav Adbar Hava in how to qualify this opinion of Remeir, who's the disputant of gebirch nasanla, which essentially is qualifying their machlekes. When did Remeir say that it's going to be hektish, this meiser, the excess of the meiser dayim? Rav and Shmuel both said, it's only after the woman dies and the husband inherits her, then it's going to be who's saying that it's going to be hektish. That's when he says hektish. Now, obviously, that means to say Rabbi Yochanan Sanla, who's arguing and saying it's going to be chulin, was even l'achar misa. Even now, where it's his, even that which he's inheriting now, it's not going to be hektish. Now, obviously, the reason of Rabbi Yochanan Hasanla must be that why isn't it hektish? Because when he was makdishit, she was still alive. So that's what's called in halacha davar shelebel olam. He cannot be makdish something which, if she's not dead, never came into his domain yet, because she still owns it as long as she's alive. He only gets it after she dies, as we explained this on the previous daf. Now, the reason being is because he didn't give her the mal kesef, and according to their opinion of Rav Shmuel, the mal kesef correlates to the meisra of a meisra daim, so she gets to keep it. Now, in spite of that Rabbi Yochanan Sandler is saying that even la'achar misa, which is disputing Remeir, who says, okay, fine, la'achar misa, it will be hektish. Bechayev, according to Rabbi Shmuel, everyone will agree that it's not going to be hektish. It's just Remeir says la'achar misa, at least when he finally inherits it, it will be hektish. And on that, Rabbi Yochanan Sandler is saying that even then it's not going to be hektish. Obviously, the reason being is because when he was makdishit, it was shleibel oilam for the husband. It was only the wife's at that point in time. So for him, it wasn't extant yet. Now, that Shmuel saying, the halach is like Rabbi Yochanan Hasanla. Now, the difficulty with that is, means to say that he's implicitly agreeing to the halacha of that a person cannot be makdish adav shalei bal oilam. You cannot sanctify something that is not in your possession yet. It's not in the world yet. But that, the Gemara, that's what's now we learn in the Mishnah, Masechet Nedarim, that says as follows. If a woman says to her husband, kainim shani oisa laficha. In other words, whatever I'm going to make, whatever I'm earning, should be kainim for your mouth. Which means to say, kainim is one of the different terminologies used to create an isra of hektish. Whatever I make will be like hektish, and you're forbidden to have anah from. So Tanna Kamma says, ein tzarich lahavir. The husband doesn't have to nullify, which means he usually has the power of authority to nullify her vows. He doesn't have to nullify this vow, and the reason is because she has no authority to make such a hektish because it's his. Whatever she earns goes to him, and she cannot take such a vow. If she does, it's invalid. Kiva Omer, he says, no yafer. The husband should nullify that vow, because although you're right, her primary ma'aser dayim go to him because he's feeding her. But shema tadif alav yeser min harolei. The problem is that she might make a lot of money, more than what the sages require, which is the 5 slum of Shasi and Yehuda, where yes, that he gets, but the excess is not his, and therefore she could be makdish that. And therefore, since he's going to lose out on that, Rabbi Akiva is saying you should be mefer because then you're going to lose out in the mice. Rabbi Yechimen Nuri Amar, he says that even regarding the primary income that she's bringing in, her primary mice dime, that five slime, you still have to be yafer. You still have to be mefer. You have to nullify that. What's the reason? Because Shema Yigershena, maybe you're going to divorce her. Now, when he divorces her, then the nether is going to be chal. Then it's going to take effect. Because from the moment he divorces her, then she's not anymore indebted to him to give her her earnings. So even the primary earnings then come under her vow, which was never nullified, which then takes effect. Now, the problem that the husband's going to encounter at that point, why he's encouraging the husband to be mefer, is then utteheyastu alachzer. Then he's going to be forbidden to remarry her. The reason being is because once a woman makes all her ma'is yadayim, all of her handiwork, forbidden to her husband, it's impossible for a husband to be married to such a woman that cannot grind the flour for him, cannot bake for him, or do all the other malachas which are taught in the coming Mishnah that a woman does for her husband, because she made any handiwork of hers forbidden. So therefore, Rabbi Yechimenu is saying, even for the primary ma'is yadayim, even something that's not what's called ma'iser, you should be mefer, because if you divorce, then it takes effect. You're going to run into that problem where now you can't remarry her. Now, the Amar Shmuel, and Shmuel said on that Mishnah Masechet Nedarim, Halacha k'Rabbi Yechinen ben Nuri. Halacha follows like Rabbi Yechinen ben Nuri. Now, obviously, how does Rabbi Yechinen ben Nuri's mechanics work? Is that because when he's going to divorce her, then the neder is going to take effect. Now, the neder she took 3 years before when she was married to him. Now, at that point in time, Rabbi Yechinen ben Nuri seemingly agrees to the previous opinions that cannot take effect regarding at least primary ma'aseh dayim when she's married, because that she's obligated to give her ma'aseh dayim to him. It's only that when she gets divorced, then that's going to take effect. So obviously a person can be makdish, can sanctify, can make a koinim, even something that's loy b'lo'ilam, even though she's not divorced, she's not on her own, whatever she makes is indebted to her husband. But even though she's not divorced, but when she is divorced, 3 years later, whatever time it is, then it's going to take effect. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's concern. Now, that contradicts Shmuel's other psak halacha, which was like Rabbi Yochanan Asamla, two different Rabbi Yochanans, Rabbi Yochanan Asamla in our Mishnah, which seemingly if he says the halacha is like him, Rabbi Yochanan Asamla is saying that you cannot be makdash davish lebel aylam. And yet, if he's saying halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, is seemingly saying that you could be makdash davish lebel aylam, because that's what the woman is doing when she's sanctifying her ma'isidayim, which is only taking effect when she gets divorced. So on that, the Gemara says, to answer this contradiction, When did Shmuel say that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri of this Mishnah Masechet Nedarim? That was only lahadafa. In other words, this that he said, that yes, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, that the husband should be mefer, is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri who said you should be mefer, but not because of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's reasoning. Because according to Rabbi Yochanan's reasoning, you require a hafara even for the primary ma'aseh dayim, which is the problem you run into, because when he divorces her, then even her primary ma'aseh dayim become forbidden to him, because then that's not meshubat him anymore once they're divorced. Now, however, according to Shmuel, actually, the reason is because of the excess. Because maybe she's going to make more than what's indebted to him. And regarding that, that's why Shmuel said that Allah Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is that you should be mefer because of the excess. Now, as Rashi points out, the Gemara could have asked right now that if Shmuel holds, as he says regarding our Mishnah of Yechon HaSandler, that you can never be makdash davar shleba le'olam, then that wouldn't answer any questions. Because ultimately, even the meiser, even the excess meiser dayim, is something that was leba le'olam, it wasn't made yet. And therefore, that wouldn't really answer the question anyway, but the Gemara asks a different question as it is. So the Gemara says, if that's how we will resolve the contradiction, that Shmuel really holds you cannot be makdash davish lebel olam, and although he's saying halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, it doesn't mean like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's reasoning, rather means like his halacha that you should be mefer, but the reason why he says that you should be mefer is because of the meiser, not because of the primary, which is the concern of the davish lebel olam of when she gets divorced. But that Gemara has three questions which are essentially one. But if that's the case, then v'leima halacha k'Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri la dafa. Then be clear about this. Don't be ambiguous and say halacha k'Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, which we obviously would think it means to say that even for the primary ma'aseh dayim there's the concern that you should be mefer. You should say it's like him regarding the excess, because that's the only concern. Inami, or should have said, in halacha ketana kama. The halacha does not fall like the first opinion mentioned, who he says that you don't have to be mefer. On that, Shmuel should have said halacha is not like him, but rather that you do have to be mefer. Or inami, or almost the most ideal approach, would be halacha k'Rebbe Akiva. He should have just said halacha k'Rebbe Akiva, who he says clearly this idea that the only reason why you should be mefer is because of the excess. And essentially, that's what the Gemara is trying to answer, is what Shmuel says. So why would he say like halacha k'Rebbe Akiva Nuri, who means the reason why you should nullify the vow is because of even the primary maizdaim, when Shmuel, the Gemara is trying to say, doesn't really hold like that, and it's only for the excess, and he's only saying the halachs like him, but not the reasoning. But Rabbi Akiva was the one that says exactly just like that. So Ela Amar Rabbi Yisus, rather Rabbi Yisus says, to resolve this contradiction of Shmuel, that truthfully, when Shmuel says halachas like Rabbi Yechim Nuri, he means halachas like him, and from the same reasoning that Rabbi Yechim Nuri is coming from. And that the reason why Shmuel says halacha falls like him is because maybe the woman will get divorced and then the kainim, the ned, is going to be chal. But on that, Rav Yisus says, kainam is ka'amrit? You're asking on Shmuel who says halacha is like Rabbi Yechon and the son of our Mishnah, which is obvious that you cannot be makdish labish labalayim. From the halacha of kainam is, which is an oath, a vow that someone makes to make things forbidden, which seemingly Shmuel says that you could do that even on the Vishal B'Lailam. But Shani Kainamois, which is a form of being Makdish something, but you're not being Makdish, you're not making it sanctified for everybody and for everything. Rather, you're forbidding it on one person in the vernacular of Kainam. Now, why would that make it different? Because Mitoich, since that you can create an element in a Kainam, in regards to what in a general hekdesh you cannot. Now, in what way do they differentiate? Because sha'adam oiser peris chaver love. What's unique about kainamas is that a person can make his friend's object forbidden on himself. He could say such a sentence. He could say kainim peris plenty alive. That person's stuff are kainim on me, which means to say it's like a carbon to me. It's forbidden to me, like a carbon's forbidden to me. Now, regarding general hekdesh, when someone makes something sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash, to Hashem, a person cannot be makdesh something, can sanctify something which is not yours. So by regular hekdesh, you cannot do something when it's not yours. But by kenomis, we see that it's unique. You can make someone else's things forbidden. How? On yourself. You can make it kainim to yourself. Now, you can't make someone else's object hekdesh, which is a general concept in as it is, so it cannot take effect if it's someone else's thing. But by kainamis, which is unique, that it's individualistic, that it's something that one can make forbidden from someone else's thing on himself. So that's why adam makdish davish lebalaylam. That's why in the context of kainamis, yeah, someone can make something forbidden even though it didn't come to the world yet. As we find that kainamis is more unique in that way, that you can create it on elements that normally you wouldn't be able to, like someone else's thing, and so too on something that didn't come to the world yet. But regarding the halacha of the Mishnah, where the husband that wants to make the meister of the wife's earnings a complete type of a hektish, that's not something that can take effect in such unique situations as kainim, and therefore there's no question, Rabbi Yisus is saying. He's saying that, yes, by general hektish, Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yechon HaSamler that a person cannot be makdish tabash abalaylam. But this that Shmuel is saying, halachas like Rabbi Yechon Menuri, that a kainim could take effect on davash labayim, that doesn't contradict, because kainim is so unique, as we find, by you can make someone else's things forbidden, which hektish cannot, so too regarding davash labayim. Now that the Gemara asks, Amalei Abaya. Abaya asked Rav Yosef in saying that, how are you proving the distinction of kainim from hektish? Because you're showing that, oh, you see someone else's produce, that you cannot be makdish his stuff, but you can do it by kainamas. So you're trying to prove it for our case over here regarding davash label ailam. But on that, Abaye is saying that our situation over here, where we're talking about a woman and her husband regarding her earnings that she's making forbidden to him, which is a davash label ailam, but more than that, it's what's called in halacha, not just peiris chaveroi, yes, you can make someone else's things forbidden on yourself. That we see kainamis could do. But where did we ever see by kainamis that you can make someone else's thing forbidden on him? Because essentially the case over here with the woman that, if you sound like Rabbi Yechon Menuri, who is concerned even for the maisidayim proper itself, her maisidayim at this point in time when she's married to him, are meshubatim, are indebted to him. They're pledged to him. He gets those rights. Now, therefore, she shouldn't be able to make a koinim whatsoever, as it's obvious that everyone, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri himself is saying that the only time it's going to be chal is when he divorces her. Even he agrees it's not going to take effect right now. Now, the reason why is because right now it's meshubatim. Moreover, the work wasn't even done until after she's divorced and then he takes her back, which is when Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says all the problems begin. So therefore, Abai is saying, Bishleima Adam Isa Paris Chaveri Olav. Yes, you're pointing out Kainamis is unique in one area where you can make a Kainam and make someone else's produce forbidden on yourself. Now, that's where you're trying to bring a proof from, but Shekain Adam Isa Paris of Achaveri, because that we find a parallel in Halachas of Kainamis where a person can make his own thing forbidden on someone else, whether he uses the terminology of Kainam for only his friend, or whether because he takes the general term of hektish and he makes it totally hektish, which again will also make it forbidden on his friend too. Now, but what we see is that it has to be at least that one of them is in his domain, either the thing that's being forbidden or the person that's being forbidden. That's what Abai is asking. He says, fine, I'll grant you that by kunamis we see that a person can make his friend's object forbidden on himself. But that's because who's being forbidden is within his own domain. It's his self. As we see that the other way around works too, where a person can make his own thing, which is the object, forbidden on that person. So at least one of the elements are in his domain. So that I grant you. However, but you want to compare it to the halacha in this Mishnah Masechet Nadarim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri? Yes or Davar, do you think a person can make something forbidden? Shaloi bola oilam al chaveiroi? That didn't come to the world on his friend? In other words, neither the malacha, which is essentially what we're calling the object, and neither the person, which is the husband, are within the domain of the person that's trying to make the kainim, until she at least gets divorced. So something that didn't come to the world on chaveri, shekein ein adam oisa peris chaveri al chaveri, like we find, a person could not make someone else's fruits forbidden on himself. So in other words, what Abai is asking is that the place where you're trying to bring a raya from, you cannot learn to say that the kainam would take effect. Because even by kainamas, a person cannot make his friend's fruits forbidden on his friend to say, kainam perisech olacha. He cannot tell him, oh, your fruits? There's a kainam on them and you're forbidden on them. No one says such a thing. And therefore, what Abai is asking is, parallel that to the case over here. Essentially, that's what the woman's trying to do. So yes, although kainamas is unique again, that you could say that your fruits are forbidden to me, which, okay, granted, that cannot be done by regular hektish. But how can you extend that to try to explain how that would make sense even for Shmuel, who holds you cannot be makdash tabash level oilam, to say that the woman could make the kainim on something which make it forbidden to the friend, which is essentially then going to be the equivalent of trying to make for the husband, which is now, it's shalabal oilam for her. Her ma'isi daim. If you say you can be makdash davish lebel oilam, so that's going to be then hers when she gets divorced. But right now, it's meshubah her ma'isi daim, meshubah to the husband. So that's the perish al chaveri essentially. Moreover, who's becoming forbidden on it? It's the husband. She's saying kainim shani ois laficha. So it's making essentially the perish al chaveri al chaveri that we don't find any precedent in halacha to say such a thing. So Abai is asking, how could you compare that of what you're trying to compare it to, where that at least one of the elements are within your domain? Where, as we find, you can make your thing forbidden on that person, so you can make that person's thing forbidden on yourself, where either the subject or the object are in the person who's making the oath's domain. But here, where none of them are, where you could try to make something forbidden that's leibolo oilam al chaveroi, which is essentially, since it's leibolo oilam, it's in that person's domain, it's shal chaver al chaveroi, that you can't do even by kainamois. So therefore the Gemara says that doesn't resolve the contradiction. So ela amar Rav Huna b'Rei Rishuam, he gives a different approach that will not be difficult, this seeming contradiction of Shmuel, that who says halachas like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, although he says halachas like Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, that ba'imeres yikatru yodei loisem. This halacha of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who Shmuel is saying like in that Mishnah Masechet Nedarim, that the woman saying that my hands themselves should be sanctified for the one who made them, meaning for Hashem, that's how she's making them into a kainim as hekdesh to Hashem. Now, the yadayim isnu ba'olam, where the hands are already in the world. So it's as if the her ma'is yadayim are already here. Now, although there's an obvious question that the Gemara is trying to resolve the seemingly inconsistency of Shmuel regarding his halacha of davar shel ba'olam. On the one hand, he says, like Rabbi Yochanan Sanla in the Mishnah, that it's going to be chulin even after she dies and the husband inherits. Still, it's not going to be considered hekdesh because when he was makdesh, it was a davar shel ba'olam. So he holds you cannot be makdesh, davar shel ba'olam. But on the other hand, he says halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan Nuri, who seemingly is concerned for a future event when she'll be divorced, that then the kainim will take effect and then he cannot remarry her, which is obvious that the woman could be makdesh davar shel ba'olam. So on that, the Gemara is answering from Rav Hunan Bar Yehoshua that no, she's being makdesh a davar shel ba'olam, because she's not being makdesh a ma'aseh yadayim, which she didn't create yet. She's being makdesh the hands which make them, which are ba'olam. But as Rashi points out, and the Gemara is going to ask, is that, however, there's still another element that's not being taken care of, which is still shleibel oilam, which is her ability to make it aser, which is the gerushin. She's not divorced yet. And therefore, that's something that's only going to be in the future to allow it to take effect, and still makes it shleibel oilam. However, but for now, the Gemara is saying that regarding the Mishnah Masechet and the Darim, that's Baal Ha'olam. But in regards to our Mishnah over here, Masechet Ksubos on the previous daf, where the husband that was being makdish, her ma'is yadayim, not the yadayim themselves, so that's davar shel ba'olam, and that's why in the Mishnah it was considered chulin, but it doesn't contradict him saying like Rabbi Yochanan Nuri, who's saying that it is going to be hektish because she's sanctifying a Baal Ha'olam, the hands themselves. Now on that, the Gemara asks, the Gemara asks, but what does that help when she says this, that I'm sanctifying my hands to the maker who made them? Does that make it sanctified? But her hands and her handiwork are indebted to her husband. How could she be makdish something that's not hers? So now the Gemara says, no, the Amr, she says, l'chi megarsha, that when I'm going to get divorced, then my hands are going to be sanctified to God, no one else. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan was concerned about, because then it's going to take effect and then he can't remarry her, because you can't be married to someone that you can't have any anah from. Now that the Gemara asks through a question we just alluded to from Rashi, is there such a thing, the ilo hashtu loy kaddish, where right now you cannot sanctify it, because right now your hands are indebted to your husband. Will the kameh kaddish, and that in the future it's going to take effect and it's going to be sanctified? In other words, what the Gemara is essentially asking is, you answered one element of shalei b'loilam, regarding the malacha, where the handiwork is not even here yet. How is she making a kainim? How is she making it forbidden? It's not extant. So that the Rav Hunan Bar Yehoshua answered, oh, she doesn't mean the handiwork, but she means the hands themselves. That's already Baal Ha'olam. But the Gemara is saying, there's another element of Shalei Baal Ha'olam, of Gerushin, which you didn't answer, because right now, she does not have the authority to be makdash, because even her hands, which are Baal Ha'olam, for her Shalei Baal Ha'olam, because those hands are indebted to the husband until she gets divorced. So how does that help to answer that to contradiction of Shmuel? But Shmuel says, davar shel ba'olam, you cannot be makdish, like Rabbi Yochanan Hassan Levar Mishnah. So you're trying to say that this Mishnah is davar habal olam, but that's regarding the hands versus ma'is yadayim. But what's with the fact that she's not divorced yet? So that Amr B'loy, Rabbi B'loy answers to the question by saying, alam alay, why not? In other words, why do you think this is a problem of davar shel ba'olam, that she cannot be makdish something where right now it's meshubet to someone else, but in the future she's going to get her hands back, that it should be a problem? But ilu ho'im l'chaver, B'loy says, imagine if someone would tell his friend, sadu zu shani ma'ichalach, this field that I'm going to sell you, le'kshekechena mimcha tikadish, that when I buy it back from you, I want it to be hektish. Milay kacha, wouldn't it be hektish that if it's sold and then the person repurchases it back, that it's going to be hektish? So therefore we see that if a person knows what his is going to come back to him, it does become hektish right now. So why are you calling that davar shel ba'olam? It's not a problem, davar shel ba'olam. Essentially, it is Baal Ha'olam. It really is the person. It's just someone else is going to get it for the interim. And therefore, when you get it back, when she's divorced, then it should take effect. What's the big question that you're having on this resolution of Rav Hunan Bar Yehoshua? Now, on that Maskevah, Rabbi Yirmiyah asks on Rabbi Loi's seemingly attempt to maintain the resolution of Rav Huna ben Yerushua. Because Rav Yirmiyah asks, me dummy? Is the comparison you're trying to prove by someone who tells someone that a field that I'm going to sell you and I'm going to buy it back, so what he's saying right now, the hektish will work for that later point in time, so that should work for the woman too regarding her hands? But Hasam b'yadi lakdisha, there, the case that you described, the person right now, since he didn't sell it yet, it's still his, it's within that person's rights to be makdisha right now. Because if he would makdisha right now, it would be hektish. So even now when he's saying that I want it to take effect in the future because in the interim I'm going to sell it and then buy it back, so okay, that's why it makes sense that it'll work for the future. But hacha, but regarding over here with the woman who's making a kainim to her husband, ain b'yod l'garash asatzma, right now when she's taking the kainim, she doesn't have the authority to divorce herself. She doesn't have that liberty and that option of the person who was gonna sell it but didn't sell, who could be makdash right now, so then they can be makdash later. But here where she cannot be makdash right now, she doesn't have with her an authority to divorce herself, and therefore it's not hers on any sense right now, so who said she could do it later? So rather, Holei Dami, and this is the conclusion of the question of Rabbi Yirmiyah, he says rather the case of the woman of Kainim is comparable Ela La'imel Chavei, rather to a similar but very much different halacha of a case of someone that tells his friend, Saduzu Shemacharti Loch, this field that I have already sold to you, that when I'm going to buy it back from you, I want it to be hektish. Deloy kitcher, where the actual halacha is that it's not hektish, because right now the person cannot be makdish. So it's a davish label item. You don't have any rights in it. So therefore, it's not going to take effect at a later point in time. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yirmiyah's kasha, the contradiction of Shmuel comes back, because Rav Huna ben Yerushua's resolution does not work out. The reason being is because although he resolved the davish label oilam element of the maisi daim versus daim themselves, but not regarding the fact that she's meshubed with her maisi daim right now. And that's shalei bala oilam for her, because it's only bala oilam when she gets divorced. And here it's at like someone that already sold the field where they don't have the rights right now. Now on that, maskevel Rav Papa. Rav Papa asks on Rav Yirmiyah's question, which would then reinstate the resolution of Rav Huna ben Yerushua. He asks on Rav Yirmiyah, me dummy? Is your case similar to the case of the woman with the kainim? Which is, that's how you're deconstructing the resolution of Rav Yerushua? But Hassam, over there in your case that you're trying to describe of where the person says, Sadashem achati lach, regarding the field that was already sold, there, Gufo uperis biyadlekech. There, the two elements inherent in an object, which is the object itself, and the utility of it, meaning the peris, the outgrowth, the output of that object, are in the hands of the purchaser. In other words, the one who had sold it doesn't have anything in that field right now, not the field itself, and not the fruits itself. And therefore, you're right, that halacha would be that a person cannot be makdish, a davar that's not his, and it, essentially it's einu ba'ilum for himself. Now, however, hacha, but here regarding the woman who's making a kainim on her earnings to make it forbidden to her husband, gufa biyadahu, her objects is in her domain. Now, she's saying yikdushu yadai. She's saying that my hands, as we explained previously, where it's that Rav Huna ben Yerushua's resolution is saying that she's being makdish her yadayim itself. That's how he's saying why it's bala oilam. Now, that those hands themselves are essentially hers. It's only, obviously the husband doesn't own her hands. It's just that he gets the peris. And therefore, Rav Papa says, holei damya. He says that you cannot compare the case of the woman making a kainim to a case of where someone had already sold the field, where there the person, yes, cannot be makdish because neither the field nor the peris are his. But here, the equivalent of the field, which are our hands, are her hands. It's just that the peris are not hers. And therefore, it's only comparable el-loimil chaver, rather to a case of where someone tells his friend, as we continue on Tamid Beis, sadezu shemishkanti lach. Regarding this field that I have pledged to you, it's collateral to you, this is what's called a mashkin, that it's pledged to you for the debt that I owe you. Now, l'kashavdena mimcha, but when I redeem it from you, in other words, when I pay up my debt and then I get my field back, then tiktish, then I want it to be hektish. When I do that, so the kitcher, whether the actual halacha is that it is hektish. And therefore, he's saying that actually the resolution of Rav Huna Rishua actually does make sense, because here the woman could be makdish, she could make a kainim for when she's going to get divorced, because essentially it's the equivalent of a mashkin, where her hands are only temporarily within the domain of her husband, because when she gets divorced, when she pays up her dues and she gets on her own again, when the guy takes back his collateral, then the hekdash takes effect, which is very much different than when it's sold, where the person doesn't have the guf or the payers. Here, the guf is the person who owns the mashkin. It's just they cannot use it. So same thing is the equivalent for the woman. And therefore, he says actually that it is a good resolution. But that the Gemara goes back and says, Maskabala Rav Shesha Beredav Idi. He asks on the last interpretation to resolve the difficulties with Rav Huna Yeshua's resolution. He says, no, me dummy. Is your case comparable to the woman with the kainim? But Hasim, over there, at least by the case of the mashkin, biyadai lefdaisa. You're right. It's equivalent on some level where the guf is the owner's, but the payers can't use it. But at least by a mashkin, where it's pledged to someone else, it is within the ability of the owner to redeem it by paying up his debt. He gets back his field. Hacha im biyadai la garshas ma. Here, the woman cannot, and under any circumstances, have it within her ability to divorce herself. And therefore, holay damya. Therefore, you cannot compare the case of the kainim of the woman to a field which was made as a pledge to someone just plain. Ella, rather, you have to fine-tune the case. La'im l'chaveiroi, to someone that says to his friend, sada zu shemishkanti l'cha l'eser shanim. Regarding this field that I've pledged to you for just a period of 10 years, where there it's not within the person's ability to redeem and to be makdish right now, because he promised it for a minimum of 10 years. And therefore it's going to be that person for 10 years. Now in such a case, still the k'shavdenim and chotikdish of the person says that when I'm going to redeem it from you, then it's going to be hektish, that there the halach is the kidsham. Now that's the reason why it's hektish, is because the guf is the person that's being mashkinit. Now that's the equivalent case for the case of the woman, where that would make sense for the resolution of Rav Huna Rishua. So he's just fine-tuning the previous version. The previous version it doesn't like, because just a blanket mashkin, you could redeem it any time. Now the woman doesn't have that ability. She can't redeem it at any time, and therefore he says at least if it's for 10 years where you cannot, it's by that person. Same thing by a woman, she's also cannot open it for, she cannot take herself out through divorce. So that's going to be the same thing. And still, you could be makdish for a future time because the guf is yours, so too by the woman. But Maskar Ravashi still asks on that. He says, me dummy, is it still comparable? Hasam la'esa shana mi biyad lefdaisa. But there, at least after 10 years, you're right. So you compared on some level to the woman where you cannot redeem it at least for 10 years, which is like a woman who cannot redeem herself in that sense of to divorce herself. But at least after 10 years, you can redeem that field. And therefore, yes, even though now you cannot, but the hektish will be able to take effect after that 10 years when you do redeem it. But here the woman cannot divorce herself forever. And therefore, how could you compare it to that halacha to say that you see a precedent where even though you can't do it right now, the hektish, but since the object itself is yours, you can be makdish for the future, to say the same thing as the kainim of the isha. Kainim isha is still different because she is totally lebel olam, totally has nothing with regards to the entirety of her maisi daim, because she cannot divorce herself, which again cannot be based on the precedent of something which, at least on after 10 years, the person does have the rights to get it back by redeeming it themselves. So we're back to the question. Rav Huna Rishua's resolution does not work out, because we do not find such a precedent of where if you can't do it right now, that you could do it in the future. And therefore, since the woman cannot divorce herself, why would we say that it would be better than any davar shleib l'olam, and therefore she should not be able to be makdashit? So then you're back to the contradiction. How is it different than the case of Rabbi Yochanan Hassanler in our Mishnah, where Shmuel said that you cannot be makdash davar shleib l'olam, and yet on the other hand, he said in the Rabbi Yochanan that you could be makdash davar shleib l'olam? So Ela Omar Ravashi, rather Ravashi resolves the contradiction. He says, Kainomas ka'amrit? He says that you're asking from Rabbi Yochanan Nuri, which is talking about a case of a kainim, shani kainamis. The case of kainamis is very much different than the case of our Mishnah Rabbi Yochanan Hassanler of regular hektish. Reason being is because the kedushas haguf ninu. The object gets a physical sanctity. Now there's two types of hektish generally. There's hektish of bedek abayis, which is a monetary sanctity, and then there's hektish mizbeach, which is like a carbon which gets physical sanctity. Now, hekdesh of mizbeach, something that has a physical sanctity, you cannot redeem. So just like hekdesh of mizbeach you cannot redeem, so too you cannot redeem a kainim to be permitted for something that it was forbidden on. Now, the reason being is actually because of a deficiency in kainim. Because regular hekdesh is a complete hekdesh which thus can then be redeemed. But here by kainamis, which is only an iser on one person, there's nothing even to redeem, and hence it's almost like kedushas mizbeach that has physical sanctity that cannot be redeemed. Now, since it has kedushas aguf, the kainam, the entity that's made forbidden in this terminology of kainam, which is what the case that we're talking about in the Mishnah Maseches Nedarim of Rabbi Yochanan Nui, that removes an object from a shibud, from a pledge, what it is, which is essentially what the halacha toma with a woman and her husband, where her ma'isi daim are meshubit to the husband. So, although it's meshubit to the husband, it could take effect. Now, later on, the Gemara is going to ask, if we're defining kainim as a kedushas haguf, which the object gets physical sanctity, like almost making something a carbon for the mizbeach, where since it gets physical sanctity, it will remove from shibudim, will remove it from the obligation that the rights that the husband has over it. So then the Gemara will ask, so then why doesn't it take effect right now? Why is it only, like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, when she gets divorced? Which that's going to be the problem, it should take effect even right now. But for now, the Gemara says that it's kenamis is different, where yes, usually you cannot be makdash tabish labalaylam, and even Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri would agree to that. But the thing is, it's not shalei b'la'olam, although right now it's her husband's rights, and she only has the rights when she gets divorced, because if you're making a kedushas haguf on something, it could take effect and remove it from the shibudim, from the rights of obligations, of being pledged, of collateral that it is for someone else. Okay, Rava, like Rava says, the Amar Rava, like Rava said, it says regarding the following three halachas that it has this entity of removing it from shibud, which is hekdesh. Rava says that if someone, let's say, creates a pledge, he makes collateral of his ox for his creditor. And then, after he made it meshubit, indebted to his creditor, which means if he doesn't pay up, the creditor could go collect from the ox, he goes and he sanctifies the ox. So that removes the shibud of the lender, and the lender is going to have to collect from somewhere else, but not from the ox. Now, Rashi points out that that's not considered theft, because you're stealing the ox from him, and it's still going to be kosher for a carbon. Because it wasn't acquired to the lender, to the creditor. It was just designating a place where he could collect from. Now, moreover, this is specifically, as we're explaining in our Gemara, when the shard that he was makdish gets a physical sanctity. But if it only had a monetary sanctity, like to the bedek habayis, that would not remove it from the shibud that the lender has in it. As the Mishnah teaches in Masechtas Erechin, that actually then what happens is that the lender, the creditor, just gives an extra coin and redeems it, and then could take it out to chulin. So, but we find, at least by Kedushas Haguf of Hekdesh, it removes from the Shibud of the creditor. Same thing we find by Chametz, where if someone made his leavened grain products, he made his Chametz as an apaitiki. Apaitiki means to say that also that this is where you're going to collect from Pait to Hei Koi. This is where you collect from to a non-Jew. And then it reached Pesach. So the halacha is that the prohibition of Chametz removes it from the Shibud of the non-Jew, where, although on some level it's the non-Jews, but this element of chametz, which is a physical, it's like a kedushas haguf type of a thing, it's an isser in the guf of the chametz, that removes it from the shibud of the non-Jew, and essentially then we view it as the Jews, and therefore it becomes a saban no, like a Jew's chametz. And Rashi clarifies, although the Mishnah says in Masechtas Pesachim Daf Lamed Amud Beis, that a non-Jew that lends to a Jew on the Jew's chametz, after the Pesach, it's going to be permitted to have an offer mid. There the Gemara explains, it's talking about where not only did he pledge it to the non-Jew, but he actually kept it in the non-Jew's home, where that he gave it to him as a mashkin. That's different than when it's in his own domain. So we see again that chametz, which is a physical sanctity prohibition on the thing itself, it removes it from a shibud. And third of all, we find v'shichur, where if a person made his eved, his slave, as a paitiki to his lenders, then the borrower subsequently frees his slave, he's freed, and the lender is going to have to collect his loan from somewhere else, because all these three things are mafkiyun midei shibud. They remove the object from shibud, and therefore the Rav Ashi is answering that kainamis is different because it's Although, yes, for her to have rights of it is only when she gets divorced, which is Shlei B'la'ilam, but that's not why it's going to take effect, because when it will be B'la'ilam, because when someone makes something into Kedushas HaGuf, that removes from the Shibut that the husband has, and that's why it could take effect. Now, then the Gemara asks, if that's the case, so why does Rabbi Yechim Anuri say that the reason why the husband should be made for when she makes this Koinomois, which could take effect on the husband's Shibud, because when she gets divorced, then it's going to take effect, and then she's going to be forbidden to be remarried. But the Gemara asks, "V'nikdashu mahashta," it should be kaddish right now, like we just explained, where it takes effect even when there's a current shibud. So the Gemara answers that almur rabbanan l'shibudi debal. The rabbis went and strengthened the shibud of the husband as long as the wife is still married to him. That they consider the husband the equivalent of a purchaser and not just like a lender that has a shibud. Which means to say that if he purchased it, she cannot be makdashit, because he bought it. In contrast to Malva, where it's just a shibud, where then the kedushas of could be mafkid from it. Now the reason why they did this was kihechid le'tiktish mahashta, so that it should not become kaddish right now, because then every woman can make problems for the husband. So therefore, it only takes effect when she gets divorced. But Rabbi Yochanan says you should still be mafkid, because when she does get divorced and then it's going to take effect, then you're going to run into a problem that you're not going to be able to remarry her. But we have resolved the contradiction of Shmuel saying halachas like Rabbi Yochanan Hassanler in our Mishnah that a person cannot be makdash b'shal b'olam. And this fact that he paskins like Rabbi Yochanan Nuri in the Mishnah Maseches Nedarim, which we thought meant that a person could be makdash b'shal b'olam, and that we're saying that no, it's actually something that's taking effect right now because it's a kedushas haguf, like hekdash chametz and shichur, same thing by kainamis, like kedushas mizbeach, that could take effect even though her ma'aseh daim are meshubed right now to her husband. I think we're continuing to the next Mishnah, again continuing the theme of the previous Mishnah of what the obligations that a wife has to her husband. So the Mishnah says, Ve'elu malacha isha 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 labala. These are the activities that a woman has to do for her husband. Techenes, she has to grind the flour. Va'ifa, she has to then bake that into bread. Chabeses, she has to do the laundry. Mevashel, she has to cook. Uminikas bana, she has to nurse her son. Matzas lohamita, she has to spread out the bedspreads for her husband. She has to work with the wool. Now, however, the Mishnah says, Hichnis le'shivcha achas, if she brings into the marriage a maidservant, well then, le'techanis, she doesn't have to grind anymore. V'lo'ifer, she doesn't have to bake anymore. V'lo'mechaveser, she doesn't have to do laundry anymore. Now, shtayim, if she brings in two maidservants, which the Gemara is going to ask, why isn't she exempted from everything by just bringing in one maidservant, which essentially is taking her place? If she's doing all these things, and she's a very capable homemaker, and doing all these things by herself, so why, if she brings in one maidservant, shouldn't that woman do everything that she would have to do? Why do we go through this hierarchical type of exemption process? The more maidservants you bring, one should be enough. But be that as it may, the Mishnah says if she brings in two shifchas, well then, more things she doesn't have to do. Ein mevashel, she doesn't have to cook. Ve'im menikas bana, she doesn't have to nurse her son. Which means that she could have a wet nurse, she could have someone else do that. Shalish, if she brings in three shifchas, well then, ein matzas lahamita, she doesn't have to spread out make the bed. She doesn't have to work with the wool. Now, but she still has to go ahead and do a little odds and ends. If he sends her to go get that, she has to do that. But arba, if she brings in four maidservants, then yeshevis bekatedra. Then she could sit on her throne, so to speak, which means that she doesn't have to do anything for him. If he tries to say, do me a favor, bring this to the attic, she doesn't have to do it. She could have one of the maids do it. Now, Rabbi Eliezer, I mean, he argues. He says, "Afila hichnis le'meis shvachis." Even if she brings him 100 maidservants, kaifal asa b'tzema, he forces her to at least work with the wool. And the reason being is shahabatala mevil dezima, because idleness, just sitting around doing nothing, is a recipe for disaster. It brings to immorality, and she can end up doing things which are inappropriate. Therefore, you definitely want her to work, no matter how many maidservants she brings in. Moreover, b'shem gamlilim, he says, "Af hamadris ishtem lasim locha." Even if a husband says, no, I don't want you shouldn't be doing any work. I take an oath that you can't do any work. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, Yetzivit niksuba. You have to divorce her and you pay the ksuba because it's your fault now that she can't do any work. And the reason why it's so important that she does work is shahabatala mevil deshimim, because idleness, doing nothing, brings to insanity, makes a person go crazy. And now you're forbidding her from doing any work, and you have the ability as the neder that you made for the relation that you have, you have to divorce her and you give her the ksuba. Now, the Gemara asks regarding the first item mentioned, which are the malachas that a woman does for her husband, was that she grinds the flour. So the Gemara asks, techenes l'gadaitach, that she literally grind it. As Rashi explains, the water mill, the water turns the wheel around and grinds the grain. What does it mean she grinds it? So the Gemara says, no, ela ema matchenes. What it means to say is that she prepares the grain to be grinded, meaning she puts it in the part of the grind of the mill that puts it in that process, and she catches the flour when it comes in the bottom. But yeah, of course, she doesn't do the actual grinding. Or for Ibai, or the Gemara says the truth is you could say that yes, she does the grinding herself. It's talking about a handmill. So either way, there's a way of conceiving how the woman does the grinding. Now the Gemara points out regarding the whole concept of the Mishnah, of all the malachas that a woman has to do for her husband, is masnit like Rebchiah. Obviously, our Mishnah is not like Rebchiah, because the Torah of Rebchiah taught in the Braisa that ein isha, a woman is not here in the marriage to do work. Ela leyayfi, she's there for her beauty. Ein isha el labanim, a woman's there only for having children, not to do all this work. Now, the Torah of Rebchiah, more of Rebchiah taught in the Braisa, ein isha el la techshiti isha, a woman is for a woman's jewelry, which means to say that she's there just to be decorated with jewelry to be beautified, not more. And v'tanya b'chiyah so to b'chiyah torn nebraisa, haritza she'ya'adin, if someone wants to beautify the shine of es ishtei, of his wife, yal b'shen a klei pishn, he should clothe her with linen garments, and that's the purpose of the wife. Now, more of haritza she'ya'adin espidir, if someone wants to make his daughter, her complexion white, yechalena afreichim, he should feed her young birds, v'yashkena chalav, and she have her drink milk, samach lepirka, close to the period of ne'urim, of when she reaches the age of puberty. Now, the Gemara continues quoting from a Mishnah that one of the obligations of the wife to the husband is umenikas b'na, she has to nurse her son. So the Gemara says, le masnitin leke b'shamay. Let's say our Mishnah is not like b'shamay, because the time we learn the b'raisa, nadra shaloi lehenikas b'na, if a woman, she doesn't want to nurse, and she takes a vow that she's not nursing her son. So b'shami imrim she metes dad mi piv, that we take her breast out of the baby's mouth and she doesn't nurse because the nether has taken effect. Which obviously, according to b'shami, she's not meshubatim, because if she was, she couldn't take such a nether; it wouldn't take effect. Which means you can't, if it's someone else's thing, which is what a shibut is, you cannot make such a nether. Now b'sil imrim no kaifa ubanikasei. We force her and she does nurse, and the reason is because that's not her rights. She's obligated as a Sheba to the malachas of her husband, and therefore the ned is not chal, so she has to nurse. Now, Niskarsha, when she gets divorced, ain't a kaifa, then he can't force her anymore, he doesn't have authority over her anymore. But ve'im hoye makira, but if the child recognizes the mother, in other words, if the child doesn't want to nurse from anyone else but the mother, then noisin laschara, then we pay her for her work, for nursing. But for kaifa, we force her umane kasai, and she does nurse. The reason is nesakana, because of the danger to the child, because the child's not going to want to nurse and it's going to die. It only wants its mother. Now, but one thing we see, that obviously our Mishnah is not like Bishamai, who says she's not mishubit to nurse. Another thing Gemara says, no, you could even say, I feel a tame Bishamai, that our Mishnah is like Bishamai. Because hacha ma'eskinan, although Bishamai agrees to our Mishnah, that he could be like the town of a Mishnah, that woman is mishubit regarding nursing, but in the case of the Braisa, where he said that the neder will be chal and that she won't have to nurse, is told my kagain shenadri he, that you're right that she took the oath, but v'kayim la hu, and that he says, fine, let it be. He was not made for the neder. Now, uksavi b'shami hold, the reason why the neder will be chal then, and that she will not be able to nurse, is because he holds, when the husband is silent in the face of a wife's vow, which he has the ability to nullify, it's considered as if who nisen etzba b'shanel, as if he takes her finger, puts it between her teeth, and has her bite down. Where yes, although it's her finger and she's biting, it's his fault because he put her finger there. Where essentially he's saying that, so too in the nimshal, is that it's your fault. Why didn't you nullify it? You were able to, and you didn't. It's your fault, and therefore it's almost like he was meichel on his shibud, and that's why the net is going to be chal. Bisol savri, but bisol hold that no, he nasna etzba b'shanel. Now it's her putting the finger between her teeth because she's taking the vow. Fact that he didn't say anything, I don't have to go ahead and be nullified. It's not my fault. Who are you to take such a nether? And therefore, it's not chal because she is meshubit. But the Gemara says you could say it's even like b'shamay our Mishnah because she is meshubit, but it's his fault, and therefore the nether will be chal. But that the Gemara asks, if that's the case, Well, then v'nifaglu b'ksuba b'yama. This is more of a global type of a machlokes. Let them argue regarding in general regarding a ksuba. If she takes any neder forbidding him from something that she's obligated to, and he's mekayim it, he doesn't nullify it. Beis Shammai should say that she goes out and she takes a ksuba because it's one of the obligations that are not being met, and it's his fault. Whereas Beis Hillel should say that no, she goes out without a ksuba because it's her fault. Why pick specifically just this case when it's a global type of a machlekes? But moreover, Va'itan, the Gemara asks a more glaring question, is that there's a brice that says clearly regarding all women, even a woman that didn't take a neder, that Beis Shammai says clearly in the brice that if a woman doesn't want to nurse, she does not have to nurse. So the Gemara concludes, El Machvarta, rather, it's clear, obviously our Mishnah is not like Beis Shammai, because our Mishnah says that nursing is one of the obligations of a woman to her husband, and Beis Shammai says obviously that a woman is not obligated to nurse as an obligation to her husband.